For some strange reason, you guys can't see my face. No thanks to Kachi and Max Verstappen for taking off my camera and taking off my fine and beautiful face off the face of the earth. Anyways, my name is Tulalige Adebowale, and it's still new since Tata Sports, the best online radio station and sporting show in the whole of the universe, running concurrently, of course, on Urban Radio Scope, on Apple Podcasts, and Hat Podcast. Welcome to the show. I have the gang with me today. Fortunately, we could not have Shay with us due to no fault of us or it. I got Orokuku G and Olale. I got Olainga. I think you go first.
Sports fans, what an amazing weekend of sports that we need to digest. We said it here on this show. That's to let you know how credible we are. Verstappen will be the one to challenge Lewis. He did it, and it's such a dramatic fashion. All this we will unpack for you. Stay tuned.
All right, perfect. Love it.
Yeah, good in sporting fans around the world. Welcome to the show once again. It was a weekend of dubious penalty across Premier League centers. What this proves is the fact that no matter how the level of technology you make available to human being will decide to make the heroes they want. Welcome to the show.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much, Lali. Alaika.
Hi, my sports family. Welcome to another wonderful show. Who can stop the Suns and the Warriors? Is the prediction of the Suns coach going to come true about the Suns and Warriors qualifying? Only time will tell. You're welcome once again.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much, guys. Where do we start from? Kachi, I'm going to hit the nail on the head and go straight for the juggernaut, for the juggler of the Formula One. Lewis Hamilton, we have the best possible prelude to this race. And we are not disappointed. 100%. I am disappointed. I'm a Lewis Hamilton fan. I wouldn't hide behind the curtain of that. But the race itself, it's a battle that will be remembered for ages. You want to just draw a little bit of insight, give us a little bit more insight into that.
Yes. The race will live up. It's like Lewis Hamilton said, 20 years from now, people will still talk about the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, last race of the year in 2021. Both competitors, Lewis and Max Verstappen, remember, went into that race, level of points 369.5, meaning that an outright winner between both of them would be the champion, Formula One. Lewis, Max Verstappen did his own part by starting on pole and also starting with the pressure, with the faster tire. But the man that started on the medium compound, Lewis Hamilton, jumped and had a fantastic start, led at the beginning of the very first lap until he was almost turned away by Max Verstappen in lap six. But he managed to sustain that. And I must give credit to Sergio Perez, the teammate of Max Verstappen, who did his own bit to hold Lewis in check. Otherwise, the gap would have been much more massive. Lewis looked like he was going for a comfortable win, leading even all through the races. But one thing I must say was that Max Verstappen epitomizes Red Bull. They had their strategy. They were sure of what they wanted to do. So for every red, yellow flag or safety flag, like they call it, they came in, they got fresher tires. Lewis was not able to do that. He went on a one pit stop. He was doing that, making sure he was putting considerable gaps between him and Verstappen. Everything looked easy until lap 52, when Nicholas Latifi crashed his car and brought out another safety car. And this is where I thought everything, all strategies went out the roof. The stewards were supposed to advise both racers on what the FIA would do. Would they allow lap cars to stay at the back and allow race to continue? They did not give any decision until the end of lap 57. By that time, Max Verstappen had pitted for another set of soft tires, and Lewis still had the same tire that had done almost 39, 40 laps. He stood no chance when the late we started at the last lap. Lap 58 or 58 was when the race we started. And just three turns to the end of the race, Max Verstappen moved, maneuvered, got over the line before Lewis Hamilton, and we have a new champion. First guy to have won the Formula One race at 18 years old. He becomes the youngest ever Formula One champion. Kudos to him. We said this at the beginning of the season, that his aggressive nature would make him the biggest contender. He has shown it. Mercedes, they filed some complaints and tried to, in Nigeria, appeal or contest the result. Yeah. The stewards have turned it away. Over the course of the year, we feel Max Verstappen deserves it. His driving style may not be to everyone's like you, Debo, but I can tell you that my wife was overjoyed. Neutrals were overjoyed that we have a new racing champion. Long live the king.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much for that, Kachi. I want to come to you now. And my question is, it's not about being a champion for a season. It's about sustainability. Do you think Max Verstappen could sustain these over the years, Blanca? You're muted,
Alanga. Oh, okay. Sorry about that. I guess, first of all, we need to congratulate the young man on this victory. I believe, if I stand to be corrected, I believe this is his first world title.
And 100%, yeah.
It was a hard-won battle. Right from the very first race up to the last tournament, the race in Jeddah, when Sir Lewis Hamilton caught up with him. I mean, I'd always been rooting for him. He's someone, obviously, he doesn't have the temperance of Lewis Hamilton. He's a great driver, no doubt about it. But a winner, being a champion over a long period of time, it takes more than just being a great driver. It takes a sensible temperance. It takes listening to your technical crew. I commend him for this, and I see him winning titles, but he needs to work on a couple of things. He needs to work on listening to his team members. I think he lost a race a couple of weeks ago due to the fact that he went against that technical crew, and at the end of it all, he lost it. However, he came back into the tournament, buckled up, brace the shoulders, and right now we see him being in contention for more titles to come. But I can tell you that Lewis Hamilton is going to come back next season with a vengeance. So it all depends on what Lewis Hamilton comes up with that will determine how soon Max is going to become the next champion for a long time.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much.
As it stands, I really believe on what we did this time around.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much for that, Lanka. Staying with you, Dustin Poirier, the guy that destroyed Conor McGregor, suffered a defeat in the hands of Charles Oliveira over the weekend in the UFC as well. While we have Vasily Lomachenkov defeating Richard Comey. The name even sounds scary. I'm scared on behalf of Richard. Even this is a post-fight.
Lomachenko.
Yeah.
Okay. Lomachenko is one of the many boxers I respect. The number one reason being the fact that he's a southpaw. I'm a southpaw myself, and I always fall in love with every southpaw boxer I see, and chiefly the main person being Mike Tyson. Anyway, going to this particular fight, it was a fight where the odds were they were against Richard Comley, you know, due to the fact that he's quite old. I think he's 39. Lomachenko has been known to be a world champion in three weights, the junior lightweight and the undisputed lightweight title. He did the grand slam for the lightweight title between 2018 and 2020. Going into the fight, everybody, to a large extent, they knew that Lomachenko was going to dominate it. However, which accompanied gave a good account of himself. Although he was dropped by Lomachenko in the seventh round, but he was able to sustain his game plan of not getting caught again. And at the end of it all, the three judges, they ruled in favor, which was rightly so. And I think after this fight, Richard Comley is Ghanaian, by the way. I think he's going to hang his boots. And Lomachenko is going to go for bigger things.
All right, perfect. Olale, I'm going to come to you now, going to the basketball world right now. We've had, the Brooklyn Nets have had their ups and downs this season. And you would expect at this point, probably they would not be topping the Eastern Conference right now. But taking the log table, they're still dead, closely followed by the Bucks. Should this come as a surprise to onlookers or to the crowd or the spectators or the analysts? Would you say this should be a surprise to us? Olale? Okay, Kachia, I'm going to pose the same question to you. Do you think this should come as a surprise to us, realistically? It is a surprise to me anyways. I was not expecting them to be.
Absolutely. When we did the preview of the season and we talked about who would likely be at the top, we mentioned Brooklyn Nets and Milwaukee Bucks, the defending champions. I guess for us, personally for me, what will come as a surprise would be the remaining teams right just slightly below the Milwaukee Bucks.
Look, and I'm talking about third, fourth, and
fifth. Yes, Wally, we can hear you. Right now, the Chicago Bulls are third, and that was totally, totally unexpected. If there's anybody here in among the panelists who saw the Chicago Bulls being the top seeded team now after 18, 17 games, after about 27, 28 games, I would need to know what kind of time machine you have.
I did. So you should give me a little bit more respect.
I'm very sure you did not.
I did. So you should give me a little more respect.
So that for me is the surprise. The other biggest surprise is the Philadelphia 76ers being the sixth seed right now. When I say it's a surprise, I thought there would be an implosion. I did not expect them to be made
within a touching distance.
What is happening to the Lakers? I thought the 76ers would be facing. I'm talking of inconsistency. But right now, with Joel Embiid back, they are sixth on the table and they are rising. They recently defeated the Golden State Warriors, so we know that they would also ultimately come back there. But for the top two, definitely not a surprise.
All right, perfect. Olaika, no surprise to you as well. You were expecting the Bucks and the Brooklyn Nets to be on top at this point, given the erratic season so far. Or this part of the conference is also woeful that these guys will get away with anything.
Personally, that. Hi, Debo and Kachi.
Yeah.
I want to believe that the Eastern Conference seems to be well balanced compared to the Western Conference. That, you know, you have a lot of strong teams in the Eastern Conference. That's why when you look at the bottom four, the number of games they won, it's not too far away from the number of games they've lost. But when you move to the Western Conference, you see that the top six teams, they're like, I don't want to say miles apart from the rest, but they are very strong contenders. Going back to the Eastern Conference, we know going into the season, Nets and Brooks, you know, Nets, strong contenders, Bucks, defending champions. No matter what, we know that as no matter how difficult it might seem, they will always have to find a way of pulling the rabbit out of the hat. You understand?
Yeah.
Brooklyn Nets, we know they're a star-studded team. We know they're having issues with Irving. He hasn't played up till now. I stand to be corrected as well.
We know technically they are.
I don't want to say they're a man short, because Irving is like a two man. So
yeah.
We know that they're having issues, but at the same time, it's pleasing to know that they are trying to overcome that issue. They are not allowing it to affect the psyche or the psyche of the team.
which is great.
And they're doing well. They can continue with this up to the end of the season, which is great. Now, for the Bucks, we know that the Greek Freak, at times, in the last couple of season, he comes into the show, he comes to the party towards the end. I guess they're probably still living in the euphoria of their victory of last season. I see them stepping up.
Yeah, accidental championship. Okay, all right. Thank you very much, Olayinka. Olale, yeah. Are you back with us? Do you echo Olayinka's sentiment, Olale?
Yeah, can you hear me now, Debo?
Yeah, I can hear you 100%.
Hello?
Go ahead, please. I can hear you.
So, I think, for me, I think for Brooklyn Nets, they've not been performing that badly. The only problem they have is just that they've not been able to win against good, very, very good teams. Like the Golden State Warriors and the Phoenix Suns of this world, the Milwaukee Bucks of this world. Apart from those top teams, they've been playing very, very well against the middle table and the lower
level teams.
Of the Eastern Conference right now.
They've defeated the Knicks.
Okay. That's what I'm saying. Against the top teams like Phoenix Suns, Golden State Warriors, Milwaukee Bucks, Chicago Bulls. Those were the teams they've not been able to defeat. And the reason why we're concerned for them was the fact that by the time they get to the Eastern Conference semifinal finals, you're expected to play. Mm-hmm. But in terms of their overall performance against the other teams in the league, they've been performing very, very well. So Bucks have their own fair share of injuries at the beginning of the season. There was a time Chris Middleton and their point guard. What's his name?
Drew Holiday.
There was a time they were out of the game for weeks, close to 8-9 games. The same thing with Philadelphia too. Ben Simmons is nowhere to be found, and Joel Embiid, Danny Green, even Tobias Harris, they've been out for a significant amount of this. So these are the reasons why the other teams have not been able to probably capitalize on Brooklyn Nets or failure to defeat other teams. So
many factors are involved.
Fast so good. I don't think it's a big surprise. And if you look at it, they are just so. I think they are 1.5 game or a game ahead of Milwaukee Bucks. So
yeah.
If they mistakenly lose another game now, Milwaukee go back the top of the Eastern Conference.
All right. Thank you very much, Lale, for that. We're going to quick break right now. When we'll come back, we'll be starting with Aubameyang, and of course, the banter that Gerard gave to Michael Owen at the Anfield. Don't go anywhere, guys. We'll be right back. Thank you very much for waiting. And we're back here. And we'll be starting with Aubameyang's disciplinary action again. It seems like Olawale said a couple of weeks ago that Aubameyang is no longer interested in football. And I'm beginning to agree with him concerning that Kachi. He is the captain of the team. Mm-hmm. He's supposed to be the go-to guy, the professional guy and all. And ditching your team meetings and all for a tattoo, to go get a tattoo, for me, that's height of responsibility, if you ask me. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if you have a different opinion about that.
I totally agree with your sentiments and opinion. It reeks of high discipline. It reeks of immaturity. We said this several times that being mature is really not about age. It's about how you carry yourself, especially when you have been put in a position of leadership. I saw a phrase, I think this morning, and the phrase is that when you are at the top, your friends will know who you are. And when you are low, you will know who are your friends. Aubameyang has gotten to the pinnacle, so to speak. captaining such a big team. Forget what is happening, whether they are winning titles or not. Arsenal is still a big team. We may rip them. That is us, just us throwing banter. And this guy, upon getting the captaincy, it's been riddled with one scandal or the other. If it's not a contract issue, asking for the largest money when you are not producing, clear issues such as this, compared to when a very young Cesc Fabregas captained this same Arsenal team. He was an epitome of calmness, epitome of maturity, beyond his age. That was why he could play in the Spanish team that won a Euros, a World Cup in Euros. Mm. Right now, the punishment meted out by Mikel Arteta, taking his name out from the team list in the game against Southampton, should not be where it stops. I personally think he should be stripped of his cap until such a time as he lets us know what he really wants. You are right. He may be pulling a Carlos Tevez or not. Maybe he's already tired of playing the game. But rather than play with the emotions of millions of fans, let's not forget that the Queen of England supports this Arsenal team. And you are not giving the black race a good name, because not many times do you find blacks of African origin captaining marquee clubs such as Arsenal. And
That's true.
That such opportunities are given to you. And now what you have done is to close the door shut for potential opportunities for future captains to come from that particular race. So it was unbecoming of him, it was embarrassing, and I think the punishment should be more.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much, Cap.
Devon, just can I add to what Kachi just said?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, Kachi was spot on about it. But one thing I want to say is that I really blame the management of Arsenal for this scenario or this
situation.
Or this, what should I call it? Fear. I mean, yes, Aubameyang started misbehaving the moment his contract was renewed. And it was shocking. It was shocking given the fact that in the first place, he wasn't meant to be the captain. Xhaka was the captain before then. But due to Xhaka's misbehavior, he was stripped of the captainship. And along the line, they gave it to Aubameyang. Aubameyang comes from Gabon. And Gabon is not a strong football playing
country. Yeah.
Continental. As such, I doubt if there will always be pressure for him. I doubt if there will always be pressure for him to go back to Gabon to play. So he had all the time. He had all the time to focus on his career in Arsenal and become a legend there. But his irresponsibility has shown over the months. And I think it is so obvious that the admiralty is of the world that he wants to leave. And players usually start throwing tantrums when they want to leave. And
Where is he leaving for now?
Started showing that. Unfortunately, which top team wants him right now? Exactly. Unfortunately, which top team wants him right now? None, as far as I'm concerned. So I guess he needs to come to terms with the fact that he's a role model and he start acting as one.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much for that. I wanted to ask Olaale this before, but unfortunately, Olaale is not here right now. I would have loved to sample his opinion about this. But of course, I want to start with you. Over the weekend, Steven Gerrard went back to Aston Villa, right? And Mike Owen came out to say he does not like going back to Anfield. And Gerrard's response was, I wouldn't want to go to if I play for Manchester United. yes, my question. Wale, if you're back and you're hearing me, please let me know. Yes, my question. We see this, and sometimes it sounds like I whip sentiment. But Michael Owen was or could have been a legend at Liverpool.
Mm-hmm.
He went to Real Madrid, which is fine and understandable. Came back to Newcastle.
I'm back.
Okay. All right. Great. Came back to Newcastle for £10 million. I could not perform at Newcastle due to injury and all. And he decided to leave for Manchester United, who happened to be the biggest rival of Liverpool. Now, if you ask a United fan, You will just see Bakayoko as just a player that wore the jersey for a couple of seasons, maybe one season between. He can never be assigned the legendary role. And if you ask a Red, a Liverpool fan like Olayinka, they will tell you Michael Owen is a traitor. And that brings me back to a player like Robbie Van Persie, who won the league for Manchester United. Quite fine. But United fans would not remember him as a legend. Never. And Arsenal fans would never love him. So I just want to ask you this question. Is it just about whipping out emotional sentiment? Or sometimes we should think about how we take turns of our career, especially for these footballers. Olari, if you can hear me, I want you to answer that question.
Now, I think most of these things are just emotional reactions. Sometimes the most important thing is how successful is the move you intend as a
you actually went for.
You made, even if it's very unpopular, how successful is the move? I think that's the most important thing. Let me take you into basketball. When Ray Allen left the Boston Celtics for Miami Heat, for some years, even he wasn't in talking terms with his fellow colleagues like Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett. But the most important thing was he contributed to Miami Heat winning the championship in 2013. For me, that's the most important thing. Legend of a club, all those, I think it's just pure emotions. For me, is coming to Man United, they didn't really achieve what he intended to achieve in Man United. If he was probably at peak, or let me, assuming he won the Champions League in 2011, when United played Barcelona, you think he's going to have any regrets for taking that move? He has a league championship, which probably, thank God Gerard won that Champions League title in 2005.
Right, yeah.
I'm sure some people will still refer to like, well, Michael Owen, his contribution could be minimal. For me,
for you, it's not significant.
It depends on the player, what you want. It's not significant at all. Because see, let me tell you why it's not significant. I will tell you why it's not significant. It's business and it's personal decision. No matter how committed you are to a club, the moment the fans feel like, or the club feel like, nah, you are not, your goals are not aligned with them, with theirs, or probably you are not in their immediate plan, they let you go. It is what it is.
All right, perfect.
Yeah, it is what it is. So I think they should think of themselves rather than being sentimental about issues.
Great. That's what I wanted your opinion. Kachi, do you echo Larry's sentiment? I don't agree with Larry anyways, but do you echo his sentiment?
I partially agree. I think I would say this. I understand Olawale's sentiment, not necessarily that I agree with it, but it's totally logical, makes complete sense when you realize that this is a business. But you also need to realize that for a lot of people, football is a sport, right? I mean, take the case of Argentines and Diego Maradona, or Napoli, the club Napoli and Diego Maradona. I mean, but for a lot of people, it goes beyond just, you know, putting on the jersey, representing us for 2, 3, 4 years, and then, you know, forgetting about you. And I'll give you a case in point. And this one, maybe Olawale, it will help juggle Olawale's. When something similar to this, wanted to happen with Cristiano Ronaldo, it's leadership. The class of players they played with, Silas Ferguson, to pick up the phone and say, young man, if you want to have a life after football as a Manchester United legend, there are certain moves you don't make. And one of the moves is going to your arch rivals. So based on that, we let you know. Are you going to say that it doesn't go beyond football when you see people like that picking up the phone to call? I mean, for the Portuguese guy, he wanted to wear my services are needed. But some people see it more than that. Michael Owen was shaping up to be a legend, without a doubt. This was the first British man to win, if I'm correct, to win the Ballon d'Or. Playing England. Because they didn't reach to, they never regarded the English, but he won it playing in England, representing Liverpool. The very first year he left Liverpool for Real Madrid, Liverpool won the Champions League. If he wanted to come back, I'm very sure. Tail in between his legs. There's something could have been worked out, or he could have gone any other place except their act like that. Why? Because for some people, especially before John Henry and the likes came, when it was still a family-owned, so to speak, club, it was sacrilegious living for those people on the other side of the road. So to come back to your question, I totally understand Olawale's argument and sentiment. I'm only giving you this side of the fact that for some people, football is more than just a sport. And to those people, it was a big, sometimes I tend to agree.
Yeah, of course, Olawale does not agree with the sentiment and is not sentimental about it. Like, I'm going to come to you now. You say you regarded Owen as a legend at Liverpool. So I'm not going to ask you any further question about that. So I'm going to move to something. At the start of the season, Arsenal had like six players that tested positive to COVID against Brentford. Arsenal asked categorically for the match to be moved, to be postponed, because they can't, that players are not in top form. And they don't even know how many players actually had COVID then. Just five tested positive. It turns out that after the match, three of the players that started in this Brentford tested positive for COVID. And Arsenal lost that match. Now, in the same vein, Spurs have had two matches postponed. Okay, they've had that one match postponed this weekend because of COVID. And just five of their players actually had COVID. Is it possible? Is it safe to say that there's a double standard looking at it critically? Or the law is just changing and we should accept it?
Well, for me, I don't think it's double standard. I believe it's a situation of pressure at the moment. I mean, we know that with this new variant, Omicron, that's making the waves around the world now, and with the fact that the medical world seems to be at a loss at the potential threat that it's posing to the whole world. As such, they decided to tread with care. You understand? Yeah. Tottenham, you can't say that Tottenham is a bigger team than Arsenal. You just can't say that. Going by records in the last 10 years or 20 years. So obviously, I don't think that the FA is favoring Tottenham. I just think it's the fact that because of the uncertainty in the world concerning the current variant, they don't want to take chances. Yeah. They don't want to take chances. And it's not only in the Premiership that matches were postponed. I think a couple of matches were postponed. So we need to cut them some slack. Let's cut them some slack and believe that they are doing the right thing based on current situation.
All right. Great. Thank you very much for that. Olayinka. Kachi, are you there? And you can read my message as well. Okay, great. Joshua Kimmich, go ahead, Kachi.
For Joshua Kimmich, the issue now, right now, he's been diagnosed with COVID. I think this is the second time. I think I can even hear that it's probably the third time. This is somebody who came out vehemently to say that he was not going to take the vaccine. No, but with the second iteration of this COVID-19 virus, and from all indications, from what we hear, medically, his lungs have been affected. He has no choice but to take it. I'm personally of the opinion that the decision to take a vaccine or not should be solely that of the individual. I'm fully vaccinated and I took it because it was a personal choice. I chose to take it. Him coming out to say, okay, right now I will take it because it looks like I have some underlying health conditions. I think big kudos to him. One has to always think of his health. I'm not particularly sure what he's saying about that. But this is my own personal take. Now, the question, and I want to pose this as a rebuttal to you, Olawale. The question now is this. Prior to him being diagnosed with the virus the other time, it looked like he was not going to be played by Hagelsmann, the coach of Bayern Munich. Are you of the opinion, Olawale, that similar to take such punitive measures against players who choose on their own not to be vaccinated? What do you think?
Yeah, well, I think because of the uncertainty surrounding COVID-19 about either the effects, long-term effects, and how is everyone's body is going to react to it. And we've seen some very deadly incidents of COVID-19. I just think clubs should take responsibility of trying to safeguard their players and other staffs from it by making sure, at least if everyone is vaccinated to an extent, you know that there is a little risk of somebody falling sick significantly, and probably even I don't know whether there's a reduction in the risk of you contacting, but I think it's just the safest thing for clubs to do, and which I think Brooklyn Nets. I think the choice even about the state is not even a Brooklyn Nets decision, but for Bayern, for them not deciding not to play in, I could understand, because I think they are trying to pass a message. They don't want the situation whereby everybody will, because I think one of the problems we have in the world today, in as much as freedom is good at times, when there is too much of freedoms, you end up having a lot of rebels. that's a problem. Now, everybody can think of himself. Do you think you can try this in the Gaddafi's country? Like, if Gaddafi says everybody's taking vaccine. You won't even ask questions. It's going to
what
be
an analogy. What But my question is, should it lead to a loss of revenue, especially since the German FA, UEFA, FIFA have not taken such a hard stand like Gaddafi?
No, yeah, I know. You have to balance it. Yes, it shouldn't lead to loss of revenue, but life is more important than revenue. Life is more important than revenue. Now, even the Joshua Kimmich himself now, looking at the impact on his health now, he has actually come at himself. I think they are just trying to be a responsible organization, thinking beyond the revenue part of it and just trying to safeguard everyone.
Thank you very much. In the same vein of COVID-19, sources are telling us right now that the Manchester United camp seem to have also been riddled with some cases of the virus. What we know so far is that a number of staff and players have contracted it. And this is so surprising. All players were tested and their results came back negative. Right now, their game against Brentford on Tuesday is very much in doubt. We will let you know as the news further evolves. Moving to the results of the weekend, in the English Premier League, Manchester City defeated Wolves by a Raheem Sterling penalty.
Dubious
Arsenal. And I just want to read that discourse and I'll ask you this question. Arsenal also won Southampton, scoring a very, very beautiful goal, building up from the goalkeeper. Chelsea also needed a last-minute penalty to defeat a spirited Leeds United 3-2. Liverpool also needed a penalty by Mo Salah to also defeat Aston Villa, led by Steven Gerrard. And Manchester United, also with the Cristiano Ronaldo penalty,
defeated
Norwich. Yesterday, December 11th, looks like it should be called World Penalty Day. Because the top four clubs all needed penalties to win. You alluded to this at the beginning of our show. What really do you think is wrong? Is it that the big clubs will always get this 50-50 dubious calls in spite of what VAR is saying?
No.
Or is it just a case of human error?
Now, let me... prior to VAR existence, we've seen some kind of a lot of bad calls from referees. I think we tend to like give them forgive them easily, thinking that okay, it's an on-spot decision that they have to take. They don't have the chance to see it over and over again. But what VAR has actually exposed us to is human being will do what they probably wants to do. It actually reveal what I call the human, the weakness of the human being weakness. Because see, it's something that I don't think it has to do with the bigger clubs alone. It is just that the referees are just probably terrible referees. Because if you have the chance to view something multiple times from multiple angles, I think you should make you should get the call right about 99% of time. But that has not been the case. What I've seen is this. There are two things I've observed. When the referee about penalties, I don't know, you guys can probably try and do your own research. If the referee, if there's a penalty incident and the referee first decision is not to call it, immediately the people at the VAR tells him to go and have a view. Even if he has made the right call, most times he's going to change the call.
99% of the time, yes.
If the initial call was actually right, but the moment they tell him to go and view it, I think something tells him something tells them that for these people to tell me to go,
I missed something. That means I missed something.
I'm not on every occasion they've actually. I think that is a psychological issue, which they need to probably, I don't know, work on the referee. For the fact that they say you should go and check it again doesn't necessarily mean you've made a bad call. It is just for you to be sure of what, because that is the case most times. Any moment the referee is going to this side, there's this my brother, we watch football together. I tell him that, don't worry, it's going to overrule, it's going to change his
the decision.
Mostly, I think it's a psychological issue. And the other part, which my stand has always been that I think the referees are just terrible. Psychological part of it is there, and they are terrible referees on the other hand, too.
Thank you very much, Lande. I'm going to come to you now. I know your team also benefited from the penalty shout, especially because Aston Villa in the 8th minute had a similar incident.
Exactly.
Had an incident that could have been a penalty, just depending on how the referee saw it. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I made a very aggressive proposal, maybe the foundation, that maybe every FA to gather their referee and transport them to another league for them to referee, where they don't know names, they don't know coaches, they don't know faces, they don't
even know them.
They're just there to referee. That is one way. Olawale, in your own opinion, do you think the decision for a penalty shout should be debated? Or rather, let me put the question this way. In whose hand should the decision to award the penalty be? Should it be 100% whatever the referee has said? If it's a mistake, we know the referee got it wrong and there's nobody bringing it back to correct it. If it's dubious and he gave the penalty, it leads to discussion such as 100% the right to award penalty or receive penalty be. Blanca.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Kachi. First of all, I've always made my stance known on VAR. I think I don't think it's a positive development or addition to the game because it takes away the controversial aspect, which has always been there. I mean, it takes away the fact that we can talk about a game for years to come that, you know, one. So teams should have added. It takes away that controversy, which is part of everyday human life. And unfortunately, this ref of interestingly, these referees are human beings, so they are liable to mistakes. So how do we reach midpoint? Now, for penalties, as Wale alluded, when the referee is advised by the VAR officials to go and review an incident, including penalties, 90% of the time, or 99% is decision. And as such, I think they need to make it probably mandatory that for penalty shouts, it should be with the referee. And guess what? Chances are that, even apart from the VAR, the fans shouting, maybe the fans of the team that needed that penalty, their shouting could also be intimidating at times. And once they do that, and you add it to the fact that VAR has told the referee to go and check them by those two factors and Kevin. So as such, they should probably make it mandatory that penalty calls should be entirely put on the shoulders of the referee, so that if he doesn't have VAR to deal with, he could always deal with the fans' shouts or the fans' appeal. So I think, in my opinion, I think the referees are really under pressure, and they are getting more and more under pressure every day. And as such, we should the system, when it's FAs of the various countries, should give them a leeway. They should take some pressure off them and allow them to make their calls based on their own judgment in some situations, especially penalty kicks.
All right. Thank you very much. Before I hand it over to Debor, I just wanted to put it to you that your fans also influenced the referee from not giving the penalty against Liverpool over the
weekend. I said it. Like fan pressure.
All right, perfect. I don't agree with the pressure part. Anyways, we all deal with pressure one way or another with our jobs. And if we don't do right by our employers, we get fired. So I don't know why that should not be applicable to the referees as well. You know, they make these silly calls that sometimes are avoidable, and they put the game into dispute. That's the way I'm going to put it, anyways. A rundown. Okay, so Arsenal defeated Southampton. Actually, I'm going to come to you now. Ramsey made a lot of wonderful saves for Arsenal on the day. Is it safe to say that he is the best English goalkeeper right now, based on current form?
Come on. English goalkeeper, I think based on the number of them playing, I would say yes, because it's literally between him and Pickford right now. If Henderson of Manchester United was playing, I probably would have had to include him in the conversation. Yes. However, what Pickford has over him is the game, that game tournament experience. You cannot rule it out. A key example would be Nigerian Super Eagles. We use different players when it comes to qualifiers, but when it came to the 1994 World Cup, even though it was Agbonivare that kept throughout the
qualifiers,
he came to the World Cup, we brought back Peter Rifai. The same thing in 2002. We used different goalkeepers during the qualifiers. He came to the World Cup, we brought Ike Shorumu back. Why? Because of right now, that is the edge Jordan Pickford has over whatever the young man. I kind of just missed up
Ramsdale.
But that is not to say that you cannot also give people their debut during tournament. I'm only saying when push comes to shove and you need someone who has saved the penalty in the semi-final of the World Cup, who has saved penalties in the semi-final or potentially in the finals of the Euros, you definitely would pick Pickford over him.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much for that. But of course, moving to Spain right now, Real Madrid defeated Atletico Madrid 2-0. Vinicius Junior coming up with both assists, one for Asensio and the other one for Karim Benzema. Real Betis defeated Real Sociedad 4-0. And Barcelona managed a 2-2 draw away from home against Osasuna. They said Xavi came in, change the diet, change the working principle of Barcelona, change the way they talk, change everything. But from 16, from 10, he took them a little bit down again. And it looks like Xavi needs more time on this job. And of course, he needs money to buy good players. I don't believe, unless, I don't know, I don't believe you can be Barcelona with Memphis Depay being your best player. That is not Barcelona. That can never be Barcelona. And Napoli looks to be missing Victor Osimhen. They endured another defeat again, this time around at home against Empoli. 1-0 he ended against them. And of course, Sassuolo defeated Lazio 2-1. I don't know what's happening with Mario Sarri right now. And of course, Inter Milan defeated Cagliari 4-0. But Milan managed a 1-1 draw thanks to a Zlatan Ibrahimovic late equalizer. Abdaki, what things are shaping up right now? Napoli is losing points. They are losing points fast. Milan are not so consistent, and it looks like Inter Milan are getting back into form. What do you think we should be expecting before the break and after the break?
What we should expect is what we are seeing right now, which is Inter Milan with a bigger depth of players that can make the difference. Younger, fresher, more experienced attacking line that can get you the goals. Ivan Perisic to Edin Dzeko.
Lautaro Martinez.
Martinez, there's so many options that they have. Coming to compare that to the old men in the red half of Milan, which is the club I support, but they have their talisman is 41 or almost 42 years old, followed by another 37, 38 year old. After that, they have just a bunch of young, inexperienced players. That inexperience
is all in the show.
We expect Inter to keep up the pressure. However, right now, because they tasted fourth position, if they finish anything lower than third, for me, it will not be a success for me. I'm talking of AC Milan. Napoli, unfortunately, cannot wait for Osimhen to come back. He needs to be back because it takes the pressure and the attention away from Insigne and the likes. Right now, everybody knows where the attack will go through for Napoli, and they are nullifying them. Atalanta City third now, without that team, except Milan. We beat them twice last season. We've beaten them already this season. But for some reason, Napoli would have to pray and pray hard. But it really makes no difference, because in January, they will be even losing the bulk of even their defensive side. So we expect it to be Inter, AC Milan, and Juventus recovering their scoring touch towards the latter part of the season.
All right, perfect. Now, of course, Juventus did one for themselves again, and drew again. I don't know exactly. What exactly do you think is a problem with Juventus? I don't know. I said at the start of the season, when you have Alvaro Morata being your striker, your top striker, then there's a huge problem in that club.
You remember we said that. I mean, it's a combination of the quality of the players, and also, I guess, the playing style. When you look at what they play, they locked with Morata as the lone striker, and they've missed Chiesa, I think, in the last couple of weeks. Chiesa hasn't been playing. However, I think the fundamental thing has to do with that formation 4-2-3-1. About Morata is not a Dzeko. He's not a CR7. He's someone that blows hot and cold. You can give him when you are playing a lone striker, you expect that lone striker that if he has a chance, he will convert it.
Yeah.
Morata is that kind of like 4-5 chances before converting one. And chances like that, they don't come at a premium, because once you miss the first two, your opposition looks at your formation and decides, okay, we're giving this guy too much space. Let's close him down.
Exactly.
You understand? So I think, yes, it fundamentally has to do with their formation, 4-2-3-1, and they have an aging defense anyway. Bonucci is not a young man, and their midfield is good. Locatelli and Rab. However, their points man, Morata, and also the person that plays behind him. I can't even define his true position. I don't think he's someone that is better playing off the shoulders of a top striker than playing behind him. Because when you're playing behind the top striker, you're meant to give those killer passes. And I don't think he has that touch. So as such, Juve, they're not in contention. I'll look at Inter Milan, and Atlanta or Napoli.
Okay.
Because by the time those two come back, Napoli will be back to their best.
Okay.
So you've been got it for me right now.
All right. Perfect. And that's the show and that's the wrap of the show today. Thank you very much for staying with us. Thank you very much for supporting us. You can support us on Instagram with our new page, @_, @NewsInstata_Sports on YouTube. We will talk again next week. My name is Ajira Adibowale. Have a wonderful sporting day.